from the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast here at the Huffines Institute. We're so pleased that you're here, and we thank you for taking the time to download us and take the time to listen. Today, we are so pleased to have Mr. Carl Kupchinski in the studio today with us. Carl is the Assistant Athletic Director for Athletic Training here at Texas A&M. This is his 28th year, as a matter of fact, so he has been around the field for a long time, seen a lot of changes, which we will talk about as we go. Welcome today, Carl. So glad you're here.
Well, Tim, I'm really excited about being here. Thanks for the opportunity to come in and visit with everybody. And I've listened to a number of these podcasts. You've got some great people on here. I think this is a great thing the Huffines Institute is putting together to be able to provide excellent information from really knowledgeable people to give us that information and so forth. So if people obviously haven't taken advantage of it, they're missing out. So I think this is a really great deal, and I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it today.
Thanks, Carl. We're gonna pay you to do our marketing from now on. That's great. I want to remind everyone listening that we'll have a question later on during the podcast. If you answer the question correctly, be the first one to send us an email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. You'll get your very own free podcast t-shirt, and you can't beat that. So we have great podcasts, and you'll have a great t-shirt to go along with it. But let's talk to Carl here for a few minutes. So, Carl, it's great to have you here. We were just chatting, actually, before we came on and recording about the situation that happened recently where 12 football players went to the hospital after preseason training. Quite scary when that happens.
It very much so is. It's ironic that we were having some conversations among the rest of our staff this morning and just kind of touching upon some of those things and some of our concerns, because you know we always have to make sure that all the health concerns are addressed in the training phase or the off-season training phase of what we're doing. Particularly, we no more target the kids with asthma and some of the pre-existing problems with sickle cell issues and things like that we have concerns about, trying to make sure that we are aware of who those kids are and to be able to, you know, watch those folks as they go through their activity and so forth. When this situation kind of came up, you start wondering, you know, 12 kids get admitted to the hospital, and from all sounds of it, it was all a rhabdomyolysis type situation, which is basically a kidney failure as a result of muscle enzyme breakdown. And when you start looking at those type of concerns, you say, well, what were they doing? How did this happen? Right. You know, you're coming from a well-respected program, from a program that has intelligent, knowledgeable people in providing their activity and so forth, at least to the best of my knowledge anyway. So you wonder exactly what happened, and then you go and start trying to gather some information. It'll be interesting to see how more and more of these things come out, because some of the information we've gotten as far as those training activities at the time frame they were performing may or may not have been appropriate for that period of time. And you wonder if this is something that they've always done. Is this a scenario or something that they just implemented this year? We don't know those things. Right. And it's always unfair to form judgments on people without actually being there and having all the facts detailed. So, but you certainly are concerned. We got 12 young men who are healthy people that were forced to go into the hospital. Some of them are still in the hospital today as a result of some kidney problems and issues as a result of those activities. And then you wonder about if any of the other kids that weren't forced to go to the hospital are having, you know, problems, some secondary issues or problems and things like this. So there's a lot of concerns you have about that. And obviously, with the red flag being raised at that institution, we certainly want to sit back and review all the data and the information that we have as far as we start our training program, which we will probably be beginning next week, implementing our off-season program, things like this. And we'll probably be getting with our strength conditioning staff who do a great job as far as how they manage overseeing the activities and scheduling the things in an appropriate manner so that we don't put our kids at risk.
Right. Well, and you said it earlier, sport is risky in many ways. But you don't really see a group of 12 people go to the hospital at one time.
No, you know, and the big thing about it is, though, when you're involved in an intercollegiate sport or any sport for that matter, there's inherent risks that go with that sport and those activities. And some things you can't prevent. Right. I mean, you know, as a parent and who've had kids go through athletic programs and so forth, you know, I'm very well aware that, you know, my kid could have a concussion. My kid could break a bone. He could have a ligament tear. Those things are inherent risk. You certainly pray and hope that they don't happen, that you don't put them in those situations. And as a sports medicine type person, our job is to help look at methods that we can do to eliminate as many of those risks, not put our kids in compromising situations. And, you know, so from our perspective, you know, we spend a lot of time taping ankles, putting braces on kids, to do all the things that we can do, making sure our helmets fit properly, making sure the face masks are on right, the pads that they wear, particularly from a football perspective. Same thing goes with the other sports, which are, you know, we try to eliminate the inherent risks of problems in those sports. So it's always, an injury surveillance problem. You kind of look at these things, see where the problems are coming from. What do we need to do to help eliminate some of those problems?
Right.
Are we putting our kids in situations that they probably don't need to be put in? Are we running drills that probably are appropriate? Those type of things. So, you know, it's an ongoing situation you have. But I think in those things, when all of a sudden you have a bunch of kids that are doing the same activity that are all of a sudden being forced into a negative outcome, you wonder, what were the problem and why did this happen or what did we do different or those type of things. So there are a lot of questions that need to be answered yet, though.
Right. Fascinating. I want us to back up, take a step backwards, I think, for some of the folks that are listening, to make sure they all understand what athletic trainers are and do, because I know there's some confusion. They think that you're actually out there blowing the whistle, running the drills, and that's not what an athletic trainer does at all.
Now, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. Well, one of the things is obviously we run into a scenario. A lot of times we were still referred to as trainers. And that's still a current nomenclature that we probably are trying to overcome, because a lot of people have the idea that, you know, we might be training horses or we might be, you know, working to train to do the physical training, which those are our strength conditioning people that perform those tasks. And the athletic trainer, while you kind of wonder, well, how did you ever get that name to start with? To be honest with you, I really don't know how it came about, to all the history of that. But fundamentally, our job is sports medicine related. Our job is to, we kind of multifaceted approach. The field of athletic training tries to prepare the people in this vocation to help prevent injuries, learning how to tape, how to brace. We're involved in the activity of performing emergency medical care. We kind of have to act, until EMS people are. We have to be trained in those areas of dealing with emergency medical care until we can get people transported in a lot of cases.
You're the one that we always see run out on the field.
That's correct. You know, yeah. So if there's an issue comes down there before anybody comes out with the gurney or anything, hauling them to the hospital, those are our guys. Okay. We have to be responsible for the rehabilitation of the injuries that occur, from whether it be a surgery or whether it be a sprain or other type of ligament injury. And then, you know, you have to kind of have some other, you know, general medical background as far as taking care of the drugs. And I'm not, as far as recognizing whether there are problems there, psychological issues that have to come up and to occur and those type of things. So you kind of have to, it's a very multifaceted role. And the interesting thing about it is like, you know, we have meetings with EMS people all the time. And sometimes we've been fortunate here, we haven't had a lot of problems, but we've butted heads with people in the past because we feel like one feels like they want to take control over the other, or that one's not respecting the other, or those type of things like this.
Turf issue.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So one of the things I always tell them, I said, you know, one thing about this, guys, I said, once you package the kid up and take him to the hospital and you offload him, you're done with him. I'm going to get him back.
Right.
and you know what? It's going to be my responsibility to take care of him. So, you know, give me the benefit of the doubt that we know what we're doing and talking about. So we're working together on this case in the best interest of the student athletes. And
right. The
part of the problem is that EMS protocols are a little different from where our protocols operate sometimes. So sometimes we got to make sure that we all get on the same page and make things flow smoothly. So that's where we always have to have a working relationship with those type of folks. And the same thing is, like, you know, we get involved with the physical therapy part of it. And we've been fortunate here at Texas A&M is that we've been able to add, we have an athletic trainer, a physical therapist on staff who kind of oversees and manages our physical therapy program and what we do as far as taking care of all those problems. And so he has kind of a dual role, dual background in there, which is really a positive because he understands what they're going through and what they're doing to help trying to help prevent those problems. But on the backside of it, all the kids that are coming in from post-surgical problems in all of our sports, he's kind of setting up all the physical therapy programs. And so we're really fortunate to be able to have that scenario. And I think more and more people are going that route as well. So, you know, one of the other areas we've for years and years been involved in dealing with nutritional issues. Well, that's gotten to be such a big task with supplements and things like this. It's just difficult to take care of that. So a lot of people are having to go on, and we've been fortunate there, too, to be able to hire a dietitian and nutritionist to come on board to help kind of oversee what our kids are doing from a nutrition standpoint to make sure they're trying to eat appropriately, eat right, to fuel them up before they get ready to play, and to make sure that we're not in violation of any utilization of supplements that are out there, who is, as you well know, is a big industry.
Yeah. And so, no performance enhancing drugs.
That's exactly right. So, you know, those create problems for all of us.
Sure.
And it puts our kids in compromising situations. So it's another area that we have to manage and deal with things like that. So we're fortunate to be able to have people on staff to do those type of things too.
Well, it seems like the athletic trainer really is at the hub of everything. I mean, you're interacting with all these other professionals that are part of the team atmosphere that are working with the student athletes, and you see the student athletes before an injury for prevention, hopefully.
Correct.
You're the first one on the scenes, usually with an injury, and then you get them back to help them rehab.
That's exactly kind of the way it works. And then you kind of end up, like you say, you're kind of the hub, because you have the folks over here doing the strength and conditioning. Well, you know, we need these people, because the stronger and faster that we can get these people, the better they can protect themselves.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that also deals with, you know, the flexibility issues and things like this. Well, on the nutrition part of it, that's a critical thing too, because if these kids don't come, if they're not eating appropriately, then it creates other issues from illness, those type of things that we have to deal with as well. So we need to work with these other people, because to help create a great team in the sports medicine area. But the athletic trainer is the guy that ultimately ends up, like you said, when they come to see you, you know, you're sitting there doing evaluation on, okay, what do we need to do with this young man to help make sure that we can put him in a safe environment to prepare him to be the very best athlete he can in our program.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on a lot of other folks to help in that regard. But bottom line is, if somebody gets hurt in the weight room, you know, the strength conditioning guy is looking for us to help take care of those things.
Right.
Okay. But yet we need them too, because as part of our physical therapy, as far as the therapy, we need for them to get these kids back to the level where they can participate in a safe manner and protect themselves or to perform at that level. So it's a unique situation.
Yeah. Now, in conversations with you and other athletic trainers that I've known in the past, the field of athletic training has really undergone a lot of change over the last, 30 years, 40 years. What are some of the big changes that have happened?
Well, I think fundamentally what happened is, you know, athletic training as a start in its history, in the traditional sense, were the people that were performing the roles in which I am in now, in regards to taking care of the people that are out performing the sports activities on the football fields or on the basketball courts or wherever the activities were taking place. And what's happened as a result of all these folks, we've done such a great job of these areas, and that we've been such multifaceted people that we're kind of like the primary care physician who kind of sees a lot of things that come through their office, but then you have to refer out as you go.
Right.
Well, we're kind of that person too. So what's happened is a lot of people have brought athletic trainers into their arena, if you will, for instance, the clinical aspect. A lot of people have hired athletic trainers in the clinic to help manage and take care of some of the therapy and some of the things like this in regards to the people that come in from, let's face it, it's one of the things we do at the HUS5 is to provide information to people out there that want to go out and just be recreational athletes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's where the clinics help take care of those folks.
Right.
Okay. So the athletic trainers get involved in there. There's some of the people in the industrial sense. We have a very good friend of mine who works for NASA, who's an athletic trainer and helps work with, you know, dealing with sports injuries injuries and dealing with some of the astronauts.
Hmm.
So I think that's a unique phase of it. And then now, as a result, we've gotten into a lot of academic scenarios, so where we've had a lot of people get funneled into the academic arena to where they become a little more involved in that area, as far as a little less on-the-field type activity as far as teaching and things like this. So it's kind of expanding into a fairly broad area. Sometimes that inherently creates some issues in itself, because, you know, things that are concerned to me are not a concern to somebody that might be in the clinic, because they don't deal with heat-related problems in the clinic or something like that, only if the air conditioner goes out.
But students can go to school now and become athletic trainers.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as you well know, we're here at Texas A&M. We have an internship program currently in existence, and I'm proud to say that our staff help teach those programs, and the students that are in our program are required a minimum of 3 years internship and work a certain number of hours required by the state. And as a result, upon completion of that program, they are required to take and pass a state exam through the health department to obtain their license to practice in our state. And I'm proud to say that our staff does an incredibly great job of preparing our kids. We have 100% pass rate probably over the last 10 years or so.
Wow.
And so I'm excited about that. Now, with that, we're trying to even expand beyond that, because one of the things is our program currently only allows for licensure in our state. It does not require allow for national certification.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, with the rules that were changed nationally of several years ago in 2004. Those folks are required to go through an accredited academic program. And we are in mode right now to put together an entry-level master's program here at Texas A&M in which students at our undergraduate level would could obtain their master's degree, or even some of those people that may be obtaining a degree in some other area that may decided that this is a vocation they want to get involved in, they might be able to come in and get involved in the master's program. And by completing that program, not only will it enhance their education, but also give them their master's degree plus their national certification, which will allow them to practice virtually anywhere in the country. So we're really excited about that. And we got Dr. Laura Greenwood, who's going to be coming on board with us to oversee and manage that program for us. So we're really excited about that.
And there aren't many of those programs in the country.
As a matter of fact, to my knowledge, we'll be the only the third program in our state that offers an entry-level master's program. There are several undergraduate programs. It's always been my belief that for us to turn out the best product, we need to be able to have the people have as much hands-on opportunities and give them those type of skills as well as the academic portion of it so that everything that they've learned they can apply and vice versa.
Right.
So I think that what we're going to offer will provide the best product that will be coming out of our university that, that we can put out there to take care of the student athletes in our state.
Yeah, it's always impressed me. I've always thought that athletic training probably had the strongest experience level when the people graduated because these students all wind up having to work in the clinic, and they have to do that to get their licensure or their certification.
That's correct.
When they finish, and I think I can say that almost anywhere I've been nationally, when these kids finish with a degree in athletic training, they are experienced and they're ready to go out and do the deal.
Well, that's certainly our hope, and I think that I'd be inclined to agree with you. We just, you know, one of the things I just want to make sure that is that we just never run a purely classroom-based program. I think that it's important for those people to get out there and have an understanding of, you know, what are truly the things that they are dealing with. You know, we talk about heat injuries and things like this, but have you ever seen a kid go into a heat stroke before?
That would be scary.
That's a generic question, but
yeah.
But bottom line is, you know, I think sometimes you hope you never see that,
right?
But and the opportunities don't always present themselves that you do that because we as a staff we've done a good job taking care of business that should never happen,
right?
To begin with,
right?
But
yeah, it's like a physician told me once. He said, "Hey, if you've done a good job, you'll never get to that point."
That's exactly right.
That's right.
So you know, and to me, I kind of equate it sometimes too. Would you ever want somebody to operate on you that just read about it in a book?
Right.
You would hope that they would have actually.
You hope they're really not practicing on you.
Right? That's right. You hope they're not practicing on you. Exactly right. So that's one of the scenarios that we try to produce. And I think that by doing kind of a multi-level program, hopefully a lot of our kids that are coming out of our undergrad program will funnel into the master's program. And as a result of that, we'll have kids that have had a lot of hands-on experience. And we'll also get the academic, further academic background that is being provided with their master's that will turn out a great product.
Right. You brought up heat a few minutes ago. Let's kind of talk about, I guess, some treatment. There's kind of a controversy, well, I'll say controversy, but a big discussion countrywide about how do you deal with heat illness in athletes in particular. Do you dunk them in a big bowl of ice, or where do you fall on that argument or that discussion?
Well, I'll be honest with you. We've kind of, it's funny how things have evolved. You know, when I first started here, our biggest offensive lineman weighed 250, 260 pounds. We had a couple of kids that weighed 270 pounds. We thought they were the biggest people on earth. And you look at today's athlete that you're getting, particularly from a lineman perspective, and those kids are, you know, if you don't care, if your offensive line doesn't average 300 pounds, you're small.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, you know, the type of athlete that we've have changed. They're bigger bodies. And with that being said, they generate a lot more heat and things like that too, just internally, metabolically. With global warming, if you take that argument, I just know it gets hot in this part of the country.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously an issue that we have to run into and we have to manage, particularly early in the year. And as raises a lot of red flags for us. And, of course, our coaches have been really good because you got to work, you know, you have to play in those conditions. So you have to be able to acclimatize and train in those conditions. So that's a lot of areas that you deal with. You know, number one, you got to make sure your athletes are acclimatized.
Right.
You know, you can't get kids that come out here and just, you know, train and they're not used to the heat or their bodies aren't used to training in the heat. So you have to be able to do those things. Number two is you got to make sure that, you know, nutritionally they're getting all the supplements and they're getting all the nutrition they need to help their bodies manage heat the best they can. So that's another aspect that we have to deal with. You know, one of the big things that we try to do, particularly from a supplement standpoint, we push in our country, we kind of come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Probably when you and I played, you know, they used to hand us out these little salt tablets, which are terrible, and, you know, they were, you throw them up and may make you sick.
Right.
We used to have some nightmare cramp problems and things like this. Mm-hmm. I can recall some. We had a, you know, a season one year where it was incredibly hot, and we used to do all of our conditioning and practice on AstroTurf.
Mm, wow.
And for those of you that don't know, AstroTurf in the heat gets incredibly, incredibly hot.
Right.
So as a result of that, we used to have a lot more issues. Well, as interesting as a lot of the studies started coming back and people started doing more, you know, heat-related studies and things like this, you started to find out that these kids were losing tons of sodium and things like this, particularly in the hot weather climates and so forth. So we started realizing, you know what, and this was the cause of a lot of the issues that we have, particularly from a cramping perspective.
Right.
So we kind of went full circle and we come back and we use a lot of salt tablets, salt supplements,
yeah.
And we've been able to add a lot of different things. We actually have a slow release salt tablet now that we utilize that sometimes, unfortunate problem is it doesn't have a lot of sodium packed into it, so we have to use a lot of them. But the big thing is that we actually try to monitor the kids by weight. And there's been a lot of sweat studies that have been performed and kind of giving you some average numbers on the amount of kids, amount of sweat that some of these people lose in various heat conditions and the amount, and when they measure the quality and the quantity of some of these things, you can break out and kind of get some general ideas about how much sodium they're losing as well. So what we've tried to do is take some of that information and equate it into some of the post-practice weights that we take on each of our kids. So each of our kids that come in have to weigh in before practice, and then we weigh them out after practice. Mm. And based on what their weight is, determines on how many salt tablets we get provide for them that day.
So for every practice, you do that before and after?
That's for every practice.
Right.
And so if we're going twice that day, we're going to do it twice that day. And then also we're certainly trying to push to the kids. We put up all kinds of charts to try to help them measure for themselves. And I think the key element here is that you got to educate your athlete. If the athlete understands what's going on with their body, if they understand how they can prevent these problems, and if they've ever had them, they'll want to do all they can to prevent them.
Yeah, nobody likes cramps.
Nobody likes those, and probably all of us have had those at some point in time. So if we can help educate them, you know, let them know, you know, if we weighed you out of practice, we need for you not only to take this many salt tablets, because this is what we've determined that you need to replace the sodium you've lost,
right.
But also we need you to drink this much fluid, okay, to replace what you've lost so you don't become dehydrated. Because
right.
Obviously the further dehydration you get into, it affects not only your muscle performance and things like this, but your performance on the field, and then can put you also at risk being able to cool your body and drive the heat up that much more. Now, your question regards earlier whether or not we believe in the cold baths and things like this. Absolutely.
Mm.
There's been a lot of information, a lot of literature posted out there on the fastest way to cool down the body is to put them in a cold bath. Water conducts cold so much well, gets rid of the heat, dissipates the heat. We actually maintain a cold bath in our indoor facility that's located right adjacent to our outdoor facility that we keep it at about 55 degrees. We've had the case to have to utilize that scenario. A lot of people, and we've had big tanks that we've just kept ice water in before. So the fastest way, if you get a kid that goes into some heat stress, they're going into heat exhaustion, and we need to cool them down because despite what a lot of people truly believe, that I know I talk to a lot of people, says the worst thing you can do is put somebody in cold water if they're having heat problems, because it'll just mess them all up, cause their heart to go into fibrillation, and then you'll have all these other problems. I said, well, if you don't get the body cooled down, they're going to die anyway.
Right. Right. Because it's a progressive cycle. Once they start going in heat exhaustion, if you don't remedy that,
that's correct.
Then it can progress really quickly, really badly.
Because it's just like, what is the biggest concern if you start running a fever?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I was to tell you that you're running 104 fever, you'd be concerned.
That's right. Yeah.
I'll promise you that we get core temperatures out there that potentially could exceed 104 degrees. And if they start getting higher than that, 104, 107, then, you know, things inside the body don't function very well.
No.
And the body does not like that.
Including your brain. Yeah.
And so what happens is you start shunning blood away from all your other organs and things like this. So everything starts shutting down. And when that happens, then, you know, we start calling the undertaker, and we don't want to do that.
Right.
So what we do is fundamentally we got to get the body cooled down as quickly as possible. So we just fundamentally, we've had a couple of cases that kids have gone into significant heat exhaustion, and we've taken those kids, uniform and all, and just thrown them up to their neck in the cold pool, and it's just – amazing. They don't, you know, normally if I threw cold water on you in a hot environment, you would flinch.
Right, right.
These kids, they don't even flinch.
No.
Okay?
Hmm.
And most of them are somewhat coherent anyway, right. So, or not very coherent, I should say. So at that point,
right.
So I mean, we keep them in. They don't move, and so until we keep them in there for 10 or 15 minutes, and you know, there's a lot of controversy as far as, you know, fundamentally we should be doing core temps on these kids and monitoring their core temp. I've just been more concerned about trying to get them cooled down as I was at sticking a thermometer up their rear end.
Because that's difficult to do.
Well,
to take core temperatures on people.
Yeah, well, it is for me, and I know some people, and I've talked to several people that are experts in the field, and I get chastised for it a lot, but I said, fundamentally, I said, if I put them in the pool, I know I'm doing the job.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, how long am I supposed to leave them in there? That's always, maybe we can debate that issue. And maybe once I feel like they're coherent again, we're just talking again, and they start feeling like we feel like their temperature has gone down, then maybe we could do a core temp on them. We didn't know how high it was to begin with,
right.
But I can tell you what it was when we got out.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other key thing is, you know, we got to get those kids back rehydrated again. So sometimes we utilize a lot of IV fluids and things like this, which is the fastest way to put fluids back into an individual. So there's a lot of areas that we utilize there. We use a lot, you know, we make sure that we provide as much fluid on the field, on the courts. When the kids, whenever they want to drink, we allow them to get whatever they want. Coaches have been really good about that. And so it used to be the old deal where we were joking the other day. It's just the mentality has changed and research has changed. And, you know, you have to stay up to it. I can remember when I played football way back when, you know, we practiced in heavy cotton jersey, and the belief then was it was not good for you to drink water.
Drink water, yeah.
And if
right.
you did, it didn't need to be cold water. It needed to be room temperature water.
Oh.
So
yeah.
I can remember many times of them pulling a water hose outside on the field and just, you know, we would be all lined up to get to wash our mouths out with that water. Not to drink it, and I will say I drank some of that water. So if anybody heard that out there, I did drink some of the water, even though
Carl's coaches are listening. Yeah,
but you know, that was the whole mindset of the way that thing worked out. And not only, you know, now we know that, you know, chilled waters and chilled fluids are the fastest way for the gut to absorb it, and we need to provide as much of it as we can.
This discussion about the issues that you see as an athletic trainer is fascinating, but leads me to a question, and that is, what's the most common athletic injury that you see? If you had to look at all of them, what's the one that you see the most often?
You know, I think probably contusions and sprains are going to be the thing you see the most of. I mean, it's just, you know, particularly in football anyway, you know, football's a contact sport. People hit each other out
sure.
there.
Yeah.
And, you know, while the focus nowadays is to provide a more safer environment for those people out there, and you know, and I will have to say that there's a lot of controversy, if you will. There's a lot of discussion about that as far as now all of a sudden we're trying to make it a mamby-pamby sport and non-physical sport. But you know, I think people miss the boat here a little bit sometimes too, because it's a physical sport and it can stay that way. But you got to understand, like the point I made earlier in regards to the size of athletes from 20 years ago to where they are now. I mean, when you can take a kid that weighs 300 pounds and he can run a 4.5 40,
right?
Okay, I mean, we're having train wrecks out there every play. We're having people that are hitting you with incredible force. That, you know, whether we like it or not, you know, bones are only so strong. The body is only so can only generate the strength of ligaments and structures like that to such a level that, you know, at some point in time, everything's got to break.
Right.
And you know, one of the big things we worry about. Concussion and things like this. We know we always had a concern about that a lot, but you know, when you get people, 300 pound people, that are slamming each other with the force that they can generate, it can create major problems quickly.
Right. Right.
And so I think the focus is going the right direction. I think that we can still be a physical sport, particularly in football and things like this, but just trying to redirect the physicality of it probably is an appropriate thing, provided the type of people that are now participating in the sport.
Right. Right. Yeah, because it does make you wince sometimes when you see people lead with their heads. And yeah,
it does me. You know, and of course, I'm one of the big people yelling at the official all the time if I see some guy come down with his head down, things like this. You know, I've been fortunate. I have not had a kid that has suffered a paralysis issue. Okay, and I did knock on the
wood. That's Carl knocking on wood.
Knocking on wood, that's right. So I have had kids that have fractured their necks. But fortunately, it didn't lead to a paralysis problem. And I've had spinal cord shock. I've had those cases before. Unfortunately, I've had a couple of kids that have died due to some cardiac issues. But and that's another. It's just amazing because the broad spectrum of things that we have to kind of be concerned about. We talked about the heat problems. One of the things, because we put in extreme situations there.
Sure.
We have to be concerned about the concussion problems and making sure that we don't have somebody that's going out there to scrambling their brains every day and things like this, so that we don't, you know. And the thing, we're dealing with college level kids who all think that they're invincible anyway.
Right. Right. They're all bulletproof.
Okay. All are. And you ask any one of them, and they'll tell you that. Yeah. And if they're a competitive athlete, I'll promise you that you know you're going to get a straight answer from them. So sometimes you can't always trust what they tell you. You have to be their judge for them.
Right.
Okay. So you know, with that being said, you know, we want to make sure that they have a long life, that they'd be able to play with their kids and watch them come back and play.
Right.
And so sometimes we have to make decisions based on their behalf that aren't always popular, not only with the student athlete, but the coaches as well sometimes.
That must be a hard discussion. Hard decision.
Well, yeah, it is. And fortunately for us, that our coaches have been excellent in regards to how they have been willing to address all that. And to be honest with you, we've actually had some coaches that have been far more conservative about dealing with kids than what we have.
Mm.
Okay, so
mm-hmm.
they get it.
Right.
Okay. So, and, you know, that I think that education is getting out there. They've had kids, and they understand how that thing works, too. So I think that's one of the big issues that we have.
I think in athletics overall, though, that's pretty much a general trend around the country, isn't it? Because of all the concern about concussions, and that people have become much more conservative about, you know, telling the kid to go back out and play.
Correct. Well, you know, and that's what, you know, makes you concerned about the situation at with the 12 kids in the hospital right now.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, how did that happen?
Right.
Okay. But, you know, then we, you know, we get into the realm of dealing with sickle cell problems, mm-hmm. dealing with cardiac issues, you know, those are just the other things. Then we got illness problems that can come into play.
Because they are college kids.
They are college kids.
And they
kids.
Get exposed to everything that the other college kids do.
And more so than you want to talk about. Okay? So, you know, you have to deal and you have to take care of all those little problems and things like this. And then that's outside all the orthopedic type problems that you deal with
every day.
You know, like I said, it's a contact sport. People hit each other out there. So, you know, they generate problems.
Right.
So if anybody ever asks you if you've ever got anybody well, the answer is always going to be no.
Right.
Somebody's always got something wrong with them.
Yeah. Well, you'll always have a job, Carl.
You're right.
Always have a job.
Well, it'll always be something to deal with. Let's put it that way. And so, you know, it's an intriguing thing, and it's an intriguing vocation. And I really, you know, if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't still be doing it all this time frame. And it really helps when you got really good people to work with. And we have a great staff here at Texas A&M, and we have great coaches here too. So which are really fun to work with. And you know, if you can put all those things together and be successful with it, it really to get a lot better than that.
Yeah, we're running out of time here, and so we always like to give our guests the opportunity to give everybody's listening a take home message. What's one take home message that you tell everybody?
Well, I tell you, this is something that, if anything, that I would really like for the general folks out there just to consider. You know, one of the things I was going to delve into, that one of the biggest concerns that we run into, particularly at our level, is the, you know, sports and athletics has become almost a year-round activity.
Absolutely.
Particularly at the youth sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a big push now between the NATA, which is my national association, and NFL, as far as directing and managing youth problems and concerns. And I think as a result of that, there's never an opportunity nowadays for a lot of the elite athletes, or young athletes, I should say, to ever allow their bodies to recover.
Sure. Mm.
And, you know, it's okay for them to have some time off during the summer. I want people to know that. It is okay to do that. And I can tell you why I know that. We have athletes who are really good athletes in their sports. And as a result, unfortunately, of an injury, we're not allowed to participate during the summertime period,
mm-hmm.
when everybody else who was healthy at that time was encouraged to do so. Well, our people that had to miss the summer always come back and perform at the same level that they did before. Okay, so it's okay to allow your body to recover.
Right.
Okay, it's okay. You don't have to be involved. And I know this is what a lot of youth programs really, really press on their parents and on their on those, particularly the premium kids that have a lot of young skills anyway, to continue to perform. And, you know, we inherit a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get a lot of young pitchers that come into our program that already develop early signs of pretty significant arm injuries, okay? Because particularly if they were good at the youth level, they're just going to get pitched to death.
Yeah, youth baseball in particular. They just play all the time. Yeah.
You know, all the time. And the amount of money that's actually spent on those activities, it's incredible. that most parents probably, if they save some of the money and let their kids recover, they probably could have paid for their kid to go to college somewhere else anyway.
There you go.
Anyway, that's always, and I say, you know, my kids played youth sports. Okay, and I know, and I think youth sports are awesome, are great, and they're great activities to keep your kids out of trouble too, though. And I understand that, but you know, sometimes it's okay. They don't have to play on four teams in the summer,
right?
Okay, they don't have to play three different sports. They don't have to play 7-on-7 football, that youth baseball. And so all of a sudden, as soon as they get done playing that 7-on-7 game, they're in the car with the parents changing uniforms to go down to that baseball tournament they're fixing to go play in the next day. And you've got to pitch. They don't have to do those things,
right?
Okay, so
it's not going to hurt their elite athlete status.
It is not going to. As a matter of fact, in some cases, it may actually enhance some of it.
Yeah.
That if anything else, I want people to just stop and consider that. And while it's always, you know, and I know people want to stay active and they like to tout their children, you know, my kids did all those things and we played, but I'm somewhat guilty. That's the reason I can say this. I had one of my sons played on three teams one time in the summer. And we started, my wife and I looked at each other and said, why are we doing this? Okay? Does he really want to do it?
Right.
You know, and the other negative aspect is back in the days, and I know a lot of families out there can relate to the fact that their children, or when they were youth participating in high school sports or youth sports, they played several different sports.
Right.
Those things don't happen anymore.
Right.
Because everybody wants to specialize in something. Right. And I had one of my sons come up and tell me one year that he was playing football and baseball. And both coaches wanted him to quit their sport. And so
he could specialize in the other one.
That's correct. And so they didn't specifically tell him that way, but they kind of alluded to him. You know, it'd really be good if you could spend more time working on our sport than this sport. So he came up to me and said, well, I think I'm going to quit one. So I said, why are you doing that? And he explained that to me. And I said, well, let me ask you this question. He said, well, he was going to quit football and play baseball. I said, do you like playing football? Yeah, I love it, Dad. I said, well, don't quit. I don't care what the coaches say. I said, because bottom line is, it's something that you love, you enjoy. Mm-hmm. It's something that you probably will never, ever have the opportunity to play this competitive of sport again, because he wasn't that good of an athlete in that regard. Okay. So I said, don't do it. Just you do what makes you happy and that you feel good about doing. And so, you know what? I don't think he ever regretted a day of not doing that stuff and things.
Right.
You know what? And his future was never going to be a professional athlete
to
begin with. And I think people miss the boat there sometimes. Right. I think they all see their kids as being a professional athlete. And while I would have loved for him to be, as a dad, there would have been nothing that would have made me happier to go watch him play at some major league game somewhere or some pro football. Well, I loved it. But you know what? I see the big picture. I get it.
Right.
Okay? And it doesn't work that way for everybody. So
recovery's good.
That's good.
Recovery's good.
Recovery's good. That's my message, okay?
Recovery is good. Well, Carl, I want to thank you today for being here. This has been a delightful time. And we're going to have you back, because I got a feeling we just scratched the surface.
Well, we could. There's a lot of things that we could talk about, I'll promise you that.
Good. Well, we'll do that some more, for sure. And what we're going to do before we sign off here, we have a question. Justin, you have our question for us?
Yes, I do. So what two things can an athlete supplement with to reduce cramping with regards to dehydration or heat stress?
So that's our question this week. So the first person to email us the answer to that at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. The first person to email us there will get a T-shirt. Thank you again, Carl.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. I hope you all have a great day that are listening, and we just hope that you have a healthy and active week. Until next Friday.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.